welcome to Meet the People of MCB with Kay Momquist and Chip Haley. Sponsored by the Missouri Council of the Blind. Let's get to it with this week's interview. Hello and welcome, everyone. So glad to have you along today for another edition of Meet the People of MCB. I'm Chip Haley.
And I'm Kay Momquist.
You know, Kay, you and I we've had an extremely busy week doing interviews of the MCB committee chairs.
We sure have, and it's really been phenomenal. It's really been interesting. I know that's a word that people like to beat up, but honestly, it has been great to talk to these chairs. They're so full of energy and ideas and just great information out there, and it's just great. And we still have more to interview coming up, so we're looking forward to that.
You know, the thing I'm really impressed with, that I really enjoy, is it seems like just about every single committee chair that we've interviewed seems to be energized and enthusiastic about doing their particular committee chairs. And everyone that we've interviewed, I just can't tell you how excited they all seem to be.
Yep. And that's exactly what I've come across, is the fact that everybody really seems to think, hey, this is a new year, we've got ideas, they share their ideas with us, and we share our ideas with them, and nobody seems to be having a problem. Everybody's just excited to get going. So that's great.
Well, talking about committee chairs, our newly approved committee chair, multimedia committee chair, is Raymond Bishop. So we're going to be interviewing Raymond today. Welcome, Raymond, to Meet the People of MCB.
Well, thank you for having me, both of you. And by the way, let me just say, now that we are into November, so it's official, you all both started, congratulations again to both of you, Kay as president and Chip as vice.
Thank you, Raymond. I really appreciate it. I've just really been looking forward to working with Kay. You know, we got a little bit of an early start, but you know, she and I had been working together, maybe a couple of months before our October election. And it's really been nothing but just really great working with her. And I really do appreciate the time that we've been able to work together so far. And I know we've got some things ahead of us that we're really looking forward to doing. So, ladies and gentlemen, you'll certainly want to stay tuned. Well, but enough about Kay and I. Let's talk about Raymond Bishop. So, Raymond, you are visually impaired. Why don't you share with us about your vision loss?
So basically, I am totally blind and have been all my life. I am a 26-week baby. Spent the first 14 plus weeks in the incubator. So what do they call that? Retinopathy prematurity now?
Yeah.
Now. Did you notice the word now?
Yeah, I know. Because it used to be RLF.
That's correct. Yep. You know, it's amazing. As we digress and sidebar real quick, it's amazing how many of your ophthalmologists and optometrists, you say, well, I'm an RLF baby. And they go, what? What? So it's amazing. The youngsters don't know that terminology. But anyway, so I am an ROP. And I was raised in a family that my mother is also visually impaired. I'm adopted. My mother was also visually impaired. I wasn't allowed to get away with murder. I wasn't allowed to say, I can't because, or, oh, I'm blind. That didn't fly. Not to mention that mom was a preschool teacher of multiply handicapped children with an emphasis in blindness. So for 37 and a half years. So no, she didn't buy that one. But anyway, so public school all my life, mainstream all the way, never went to the school for the blind. And even obviously up through university and all that. So that's basically it in a nutshell, for the blindness.
Okay.
Nothing exciting, very boring.
So now, are you considered total or high partial? Or
I am considered total. I have light perception in the left eye and the right eye is prosthetic.
Okay. And I know most of us that know Raymond Bishop, we know your nationality, but maybe someone that's listening for the very first time say, boy, he's got a different accent. So what would be your nationality, Raymond?
I am American, but basically because of the prematurity and all that, I did have a jaw deformity. And so after they fixed the jaw and all that, they had to teach me how to re-speak. And my speech therapist happened to be from the UK. So I was taught the Queen's English when they taught me how to speak again.
Oh, very interesting. Okay, very good.
And yeah, so that's why you get, not to mention that my first degree is in classical voice music. So I have a degree in music, classical voice. So diction. Oh, awesome. Also,
yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, awesome. Okay. Raymond, you mentioned a little bit about your mother there. What other family do you have? Any siblings?
I am an only child.
Okay. All right. So now, have you always been from around the St. Louis area?
Actually, no. My family and I, my wife, Donna, which some have had occasion to meet and some have not, those that were present at the convention this year in St. Louis, would have seen my wife receive the Member of the Year and also one of the Member of the Month awards. So she was present for that at the banquet. But my spouse, Donna, and we've been married, it'll be 21 years in January, moved to St. Louis with our three boys in January of 2004 from Las Vegas.
All right. Well, once again, we want to congratulate Donna on being the 2022 recipient of the Member of the Year Award. So congratulations, Donna. Very happy and delighted for you to get that award. So I'm going to pass it over to Kay. I know Kay is always got questions. Go ahead, Kay.
Yes, she does.
I mean, yes, she does.
All right. My question is, okay, you talked about moving from Las Vegas to St. Louis, or Missouri, rather. Where did you actually grow up? What state or whatever? And what brought you to Vegas? And then why the move to Missouri?
So officially, I grew up I was born and grew up in Arizona. I was born in Tempe, Arizona, which is known for ASU. And then I lived in Scottsdale and Phoenix as a child. And then I got a job with the Internal Revenue Service in 1991 and moved to Houston and was there for 2 years and moved to Vegas when my former wife could not hack Houston anymore. She didn't like Houston. She didn't like the cloudiness. She didn't like the weather. She wanted to go back to Arizona, but that wasn't to be. And so we ended up going to Las Vegas, and it was close enough. She was happy and happy-ish. And there we lived for 10 years. And then when Donna and I met and consequently married, we decided that Las Vegas was not the appropriate place to raise three children. And so we talked and discussed, and I wanted to come east because I knew that the ability and the opportunities for children was a little bit better. And So I didn't want to go all the way to, say, the East Coast. That was a very high-end living. And I said, well, I've heard that St. Louis has a very, very diverse culture and you know, lots of different, it's a great diversity to live in that type of area and in a very non-committal. You're going to find a lot of different nationalities, etc. And she said, well, let's look into it. So we did some research and found out that there were only something like 11 students per faculty member in schools, in the public school system here, versus 21.7 students per faculty member in Las Vegas. I've always wondered about that 0.7. What do you count as part seven? Is that two legs, one arm, and a head? Or is, oh, anyway. So, yeah. But anyway, so we figured it was a better learning curve here. Well, it just so happened that when we came to St. Louis and all that, then I learned about the blind pension, which was a great help, believe it or not, because I was out of work for, probably the first 6 months that we were here. But I learned about the blind pension and all the wonderful things here that Missouri had to offer, and learned about JAWS through the TAPI and so on and so forth. And as I look back now, it's all history, but so diverse and so different than what I was used to in, say, Phoenix or used to in Nevada. Even in Texas, we sometimes get very frustrated here in Missouri with the blind pension. We get very frustrated with some of the services that are offered to the visually impaired. But Missouri seems to have quite a bit. I would also say that they have not yet in Missouri combined their rehab services for the blind and their rehab services for other handicaps. So it's not just voc rehab, it is rehab services for the blind, voc rehab for those that are voc rehab. So it's something that I think is awesome that they've kept here. I know that in Arizona, I know that in Nevada, I know that in Texas, they've combined all that. So blindness, wheelchair, deaf, all of that falls under the auspice of voc rehab, if that makes any sense to all of you.
Yeah.
So I think that with us being a separate entity in Missouri, I think that has helped to keep a lot of these services that, sadly, I think some of us all tend to take for granted in Missouri, because that's why I think we've been able to keep them. And some of the other states don't have them. So
right. Well,
I got to tell you, Raymond, that we've had the fight for those categorical services. They just didn't happen. No. There's been times when they've wanted to combine all the disability groups together under one program, but we've had to fight for those categorical services. So you are exactly right. I'm sorry.
I am one who can say unequivocally that I am grateful that you did fight for them before my time. And now that I'm here, I like standing alongside all of you and fight with you for them.
Yeah, that's very true. So you mentioned that when you were in Las Vegas, you worked for the IRS, I think you said. So what is your work history? Because I know you've had a very varied work history, and it's quite interesting, actually.
So if I may, I'll back you up. So when I left Arizona, I went to that wonderful place in Little Rock, Arkansas, that most people know as Lions World Services for the Blind, which is now just known as World Services for the Blind. I go back as far as when it was known as Arkansas Enterprises for the Blind. So I actually go back just a tiny bit farther than even Lions World Services. But went and got my training for the Internal Revenue Service. That's why we were in Houston. That was my post of duty in Houston. And then my, as I said, my former wife did not want to stay in Houston. She said it was a dreary place. It wasn't a nice place. She just wasn't happy there. So I'd asked for a transfer. Now, if this doesn't make your blood run cold, I had been accepted and was looking into transferring to Oklahoma City.
Wow.
And if I had gone to Oklahoma City, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you. Because I would have been in the building that...
The Mara building,
Yeah. And my son probably would have been in that daycare. So, but nope, Oklahoma City wasn't good enough. We didn't want to go there. So I left the Internal Revenue Service and we moved to Vegas. And my job in Vegas was working in the Division of Child and Family Services, which is the state-run children's mental health services. And so I spent from 1994 until 2003 working in mental health services for children. That's a rough job, here to tell you. And then when we when I met Donna and we were leaving Vegas, then I came to St. Louis. I then had a few different little things. I worked as a administrative assistant for a psychologist as their admin assist, and that was back in the day when your counselors first were starting to do telework. And we didn't have Zoom and we didn't have FaceTime and we didn't have all that. So that's when they started doing phone a counselor. Basically, you had your sessions on the phone. So I was the admin assist. I set up all the scheduling and all that for the counselor and all that. Well, then I moved on from that and became a customer service rep for a company that some people know as Serotech. I don't remember what it's called now, but it's no longer Serotech. Anyway, did that for 3 years. And then I needed to do something. I had some health issues and was out of work for about a year or so. And it was time to get back in the workforce. And so I said, well, let me fall back on my old standby. And I said, let me go back to the government. So I went back to the Internal Revenue Service. And that was in 2012, 2013. And found that it was not the same place that I used to work for. When I worked for the Internal Revenue Service, I was a taxpayer service representative. And that was wonderful. I got to read tax law. I got to interpret tax law, and I got to pass that along to the taxpayer. When I went back to the Internal Revenue Service, I went back as a CSR or a customer service rep, and I was working in collections. That wasn't fun. So in October of 2013, when the government got shut down for, what was that? That land record of, 21 days or something along those lines. Do you recall?
I know it was quite some time, and I think it wouldn't it seem like it was pretty well in late December or something. I could be mistaken.
Yeah, I can't remember. I can't remember exactly, but it was that land record. I can't remember. But the point is, that's when I left the Internal Revenue Service again, because we were all furloughed. We were all said, bye, see you, go. And so I then looked into the BEP program and was accepted and began my training to become a manager of convenience stores. And in August of 2014, graduated from that program. In October of 2014, took over a store in the county courthouse in a county court system in Clayton. Ran that deli for approximately 14 months. And that store was closed forever due to the fact that they had reconstructed or revised, remodeled, upgraded the court system. And they, when they did this, they didn't take into consideration the fact that we were in the basement, and they ran the main pipe that took all the waste away from the brand new bathroom that they built on the main level, right across the store, right across the counter where the registers were. And health department said, no, they said, we aren't going to revise it. Health department said, you're closed. So we, because we were a food establishment, they couldn't have it.
And yeah.
So they, after 39, almost 40 years, that facility got closed. Well, then I was transferred to another facility, and I was in that facility from 2016 until August of 2018. When again, that government facility, which is now known as the Goodfellow Complex, started having issues, and they consequently down the road, and now it is again, that facility is closed, and that facility, the Goodfellow facility, is slowly dying off. They're, I think, in the process, from what I last heard, they're in the process of moving people out of that facility. But the store is closed due to a sundress different reasons. Anyway, so then I said, well, I'm not going to sit around doing nothing. So I went back to school, and I am now a licensed massage therapist. So I've had a very, very diverse work history. I don't think I plan on going back to school again. I really enjoy what I'm doing. So I think this will be the end of the career searching. I think I found it. So loving it. Gets me up in the morning, because it's when I wake up, the thing I think of is, who am I going to meet new today? And who am I going to be able to help today? Mm. And that's the exciting part. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I can definitely attest to that. It's very nice to feel needed and to be able to help people and to really see the difference that you can make. Believe me, I understand that, and I commend you for that. Chip, do you have any questions?
Oh, I always do. So Raymond, I want to back up. I've got a couple other questions, but I want to start off with this question. Going back to your childhood as an only child growing up, can you share with us maybe some challenges that you faced as an only child with a visual impairment in public schools, at home, or wherever? Can you share with us maybe how it was for you as an only child with a visual impairment?
You know, it's a very good question. And it's interesting you asked that question. And you're going to put me on the spot, Chip, because to be perfectly honest with you, I never really stopped to think about it. There were challenges as a visually impaired person. Being an only child, I loved. At least I thought I did. Sometimes I look back now and say it would have been nice to have a sibling that I could have picked on or, you know, gotten into trouble with. But don't worry, I found plenty of time to get into trouble. That's for another day and another story. Anyway, I had friends in school. Believe me, if I didn't think of the trouble, they would help me find it. Yeah. Anyway. So, but because of the way I was raised, because of the way my mother believed and all that, I really didn't contemplate or think, oh, I'm blind, and I wasn't allowed to get into that pity party. I was the only blind person in most of my schools. When I was in the elementary school, K through sixth, and then middle school, I was the only blind kid. And then when I got to high school, I was the only blind kid until my junior year. And then there was another blind person who came along, and I was already established, so they pretty much accepted. Oh, so there's another, you know, blind person wandering around. And she was a very quiet, unassuming individual. She was very shy. I can't say that I've ever been accused of being shy. But the challenge was I wanted to do things like my peers. So for example, I wanted to be in the musical and we were doing Fiddler on the Roof. And it was my junior year. Yeah, my junior year. And so I stayed after school. I went to the auditorium. I wanted to try out. I'm sitting there waiting and nothing. Never was called for tryout. And so I got very upset and I went home and I told my mother that I never got a chance to try out. So my mother, being the crusader that she is and was and God lover, calls up the drama director and she says, hi, Mrs. Benton. I understand that, you know, Raymond wanted to do tryouts yesterday and never got a chance to. And so Mrs. Benton starts out, well, you know, Mrs. Bishop, Raymond's blind. And my mother said, really? Who would have thunk it? I didn't know that. I got my sarcasm, honestly. So cut a long story short, my mom said, you know, why was he not allowed to try out? Well, you know, what if he falls off the stage?
Oh, Lord.
Why did I know that was coming? So my mother said, you know, I can guarantee you one thing. There's not a lot of things in life that we can guarantee each other, but I'm going to guarantee you one thing. And Mrs. Ben's like, what is that? She said, he'll only do it once.
Hmm.
And she said, well, why do you say that? Because he's not into pain. And, you know, he performs there twice a year in the choir. Have you seen him fall off the stage yet? Well, no. Okay. So again, I ask, why did he not get to try out? And she couldn't give her an answer. So consequently, I did end up becoming the rabbi and Fiddler on the Roof, by the way. And I did not fall off the stage. And so it was very exciting to be able to do that. But those were the kind of challenges that I faced. It was not for the lack of want, and it was not for the lack of trying. It was sometimes the is the word impediment of those around me, of the sighted world that was unsure and unknown because they had never dealt with that. It wasn't commonplace to them. But for the most part, I was able to get through. I was a very big advocate for myself. Sometimes not always appropriately. As I've gotten older, I've mellowed and I'm not so loud and obnoxious about how unfairly the blind are being treated. Not to say I can't and won't, but I've learned to be a little more diplomatic about it. But those are the things that the other thing that was difficult in public school was sometimes the teachers just didn't understand or want to understand. I want to say that they just couldn't. It just wasn't in their mindset. That sometimes it took a little longer for someone who was blind or visually impaired to get something done. So for example, when we were doing geometry in mathematics, my mother had to call the school and say to the teacher, look, I understand that you have a XYZ number of days to get this homework done. I'm asking you to give us a little extra time. Raymond will do it, but I need to go and find these objects in a 3D format. You cannot expect a blind person who's never seen to be able to determine what a three-dimensional object looks like off of a two-dimensional page. Some were understanding, some were not. Those that were not, she went toe to toe with. Those that were, we got along well.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I got just a couple other questions, and then I'm going to pass it back over to Kay, and she can ask her famous question. So, Raymond, here you are now. You're a member of MCB. You've held various positions. I know currently you are the Missouri Guide Dog Users President. You've been ATI President at one time. You've chaired the policy committee. You've currently now are a multimedia committee chair. You are the current president of UWB, United Workers for the Blind. There may be something else that I'm missing, but so you've really gotten involved in MCB. But let me just go back to the very beginning. What was it about MCB that attracted you and Donna to want to be a part of this organization?
Interesting question. So when I'm trying to think even how I got involved, there was an individual who is now passed on, and she approached us and she said, well, why don't you come to United Workers for the Blind and check it out? And I had always said, no, I don't want to be part of the blind community. I know what a snobbish thing to say. But again, remember, I didn't hang out with other blind people. I always had been around sighted peers. I didn't know other blind people. It's sad to say, but thinking back, that was the case. And so I said, well, okay, we'll check it out. So Donna and I checked out United Workers for the Blind. And that was, I think, in March, April of 2005. Could have been May. I believe Jack Link was the president then of UWB. And we decided, well, we could join. It would be something we could do one Friday a month. And I needed to get my hands back into things and how else to learn about the different programs that were available. And that's where I started learning about, you know, TAPI and other programs that have come up through the years. And so that's how I joined UWB. And then, of course, went to my first convention. And that convention that I recall going to, my first convention, was out, or was it St. Charles? That hotel on I-70 in St. Charles. I cannot for the life of me remember. I don't even think the hotel exists anymore. I can't remember if it was a Sheraton. I can't remember if it was a, I just can't remember. And what I do remember very clearly, though, is that Phyllis Love was the current MCB president back then, if I recall correctly. And I've never looked back. I don't think we've always been part of UWB. We've been to almost every single convention. In fact, I can't think of one we haven't been to, except for the ones we didn't have in person during the pandemic. And those we still attended, we just did them virtually. So, and then just as the years have gone by, I've been asked to do this and do that. And I have done it. And I think my name has just gotten out there accordingly. And here I am.
Well, I got to tell you, Raymond, I can't tell you how happy and pleased that we are that both you and Donna are part of this organization. You've contributed in such a way that you've helped us to grow, develop. So want to thank both you and Donna for joining MCB and devoting yourselves to the organization. So I'm going to pass it over to Kay. Kay, you want to ask your famous question?
Well, you asked him about MCB and how he got involved, and that is really interesting. You know, as we interview people, it's fascinating to find out how they found out about MCB. Some people have been involved in the blindness community all their lives. Some people haven't. And somehow they managed to gravitate to this organization. And I think that's really fascinating to find out how the various individuals have done this. So my question that he keeps referring to as my famous question is, what have you done, or what are your interests or whatever, that you in your life that people don't know about Raymond Bishop? Is there something that you've done that might surprise people, that or hobby or whatever? It can be all kinds of different things. It just depends on the individual. But is there something that you've done that might surprise people?
Would you believe that I actually carry the title doctor?
Okay, tell us more about that, if you want to.
I can. So all my life, I wanted to be a doctor, and I've always loved the medical world. However, did not want to be pigeonholed into being a quote-unquote psychiatrist. And that's where if you ever look at a lot of your blind individuals who are doctors that are in the medical field, what are they? They're psychiatrists or psychologists. They're, you know, in that section. So I went through, and it took me some time, but I carry my doctorate in divinity. So I am a DD. So that's my little secret that a lot of people don't know. I was going to do counseling with it. I wanted to do counseling, and after completing the course and getting that degree, I really had to sit down and look at me as an individual and look at where I could see and felt that the world was going. And I thought, you know, number one, you're doing good to keep you in line. Didn't always do that well. Number two, I don't think this is, you know, I don't think you will make that great of a counselor. And the reason I say that is I am a very big believer of accountability. Take ownership, be it right, be it wrong. Take ownership of it. And I have learned as the years have gone by that life is not black and white. I'm not there yet. I'm not perfect at it yet. I don't know that I ever will be perfect, because obviously we all know that we're not perfect. But I have struggled for years with a black and white concept of the world. And that's not where you want to be when you're counseling individuals. It's not a good place to be. Most of the world looks at things gray. There's lots of a gray area, and I've never been good at that. So I backed off from doing counseling, and I knew I didn't want to go and run a church. I knew I didn't want to do pastoring. I knew I didn't want to do all that. And that would be another thing I could have done with my degree. So I got it. It's there. I'm proud of the accomplishment, but apparently that's not where I was meant to be and was led to be. So that's a very quiet secret that not a lot of people know.
Well, that's really interesting. I agree with accountability. Too many people allow themselves to be victims, and we don't have to get into that long discussion, because I completely agree with you. And
what did you say? It's supposed to be 30. You said 30 minutes. We'd be here for what? 3 days?
And it'd be a very long podcast.
Yes, it would.
So, and you know, I believe in people treating each other the way they want to be treated, and a lot of things like that. So but that is fascinating, and I'm glad you shared that with us. I think there's going to be a lot of people that did not know that, and so I appreciate knowing that. Chip, would you like to?
Yeah, Raymond, let me just quickly say I have thoroughly enjoyed today's interview. I've learned things about you that I never knew. And I wish we had a lot more time, because I love just sitting here and learning all the things that you've been sharing with us today. I wish we had more time. Unfortunately, we don't. We've run out of time. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you know someone that you would like for Kay and I to interview, you can have them contact me, Chip Haley, at 417-540-9703.
Or me, Kay Momquist, at 608-436-2610.
You never know. You might hear yourself next time right here on Meet the People of MCB. Until next time, have a great week, everybody.